Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Best Of Podcast.
And we welcome all of you. The second hour is live, and we will talk to you. I don't know what else. The first hour was on tape. We did that this morning. Let's get back to the calls here, and John is up next. Good afternoon, John.
And a good afternoon, the godfather of sports talk.
Thank you.
I've been meaning to ask you this. Can you go take a little trip back in history? And I can remember bits and pieces of it, but talk about Namath when he was suspended over his bar.
Yeah, as best I remember, Joe Namath owned a bar in New York called Bachelor's Three. I think he had one down in South Florida as well. And the commissioner at the time, Pete Rozelle, told him to unload it, and he refused. And he ended up getting suspended. I don't think it lasted that long, but it really made Namath into quite a hero, the fact that he would stand up to the authority.
Paul, I got a little story that was passed along on Redfish Barber. Everybody is famous with the tower.
Right.
That Coach Bryant had. And they were practicing one day, and this player said, when you hear the change, something's going to happen. And Coach Bryant made his way down from the tower, and he went through the players, and he walked over to this offensive lineman, got in his face, and actually, I think this may be enhanced a little bit, but Coach Bryant was a big man. And he walked over to this offensive lineman, and he looked him in the eyes and said, "Let me tell you something, son. If you don't get your house in order, you can turn that damn jersey in." You know who the player was?
I'm guessing it was somebody pretty famous.
John Hanna.
only the best lineman Brian ever had.
Yeah. Well, one of the best linemen ever.
Correct.
But anyway, they...
It looked like it worked out.
Excuse me?
I said it looked like Bryant's admonition worked out pretty well. Hey, thank you so much for the call. Jeff is next in Orlando. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Paul. Thank you for taking my call. I was so excited to see Vanderbilt's going to have the largest renovation of their stadium in 40 years. And I think they're the smallest football stadium right now at 40,000. I don't know what their anticipated capacity is. But my question to you is, the new with Texas and Oklahoma joining the conference, the payout to each school will soon be $84 million. Is that correct, per year?
That's what the projections have been. I think... If you look ahead to when they get in, and once the new ESPN contract goes into effect in a couple of years, the projections are between 80 to 100, and it could go as high as 120 million, but it depends on the year.
Right. Well, don't you think that a school like Vanderbilt, with that kind of revenue and they're investing in football, eventually would have a coaching staff better than Clemson or Florida State or Miami or any ACC school that only has a payout of $31 million through 2036?
You would think so. I think that part of your argument is really good. I think the ACC is heading toward an iceberg. Now,
yeah.
for Vanderbilt to improve in the SEC, it has to get out of 14th place and find a way to get somewhere closer to the middle. And right now, that seems to be the challenge.
Yeah, but with the money, I can see it.
Remember, they have to use that money wisely.
Right. But why would an athlete want to go to an ACC school when they could go to an SEC school that had probably a better coaching staff, better facilities?
Well, let me ask you a question, though, Jeff. Right now, if you looked at the ACC, and I know I'm putting you on the spot, can you, which coaching staffs do you think Clark Lee's coaching staff would outrank in the ACC?
Oh, when he gets his players, he had a decent recruiting class this year. But when he gets his players, I wouldn't be surprised he could be up there with the coach at Wake Forest. That would not surprise me.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Because the money's going to answer all. It'll be the all with all, to get things going.
It's not like Vanderbilt's gone broke the last few years. They've been collecting a big check.
Oh, yes, but now it's even...
They have one of the largest endowments in, maybe the largest in the... Well, one of the largest in the SEC. Before you can win, Jeff, you have to want to win.
Right. But I still say an SEC coaching job will far outrank any other conference coaching job, period, bar none, very soon. Wouldn't you agree?
No, I wouldn't. Ty is up next from Florida. Hello, Ty. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. Great to be on the show.
Thank you.
Listen, I'm a Bulldog fan and live in Santa Rosa Beach. And, it's funny how you listen to your show and you hear certain ideas. But one thing that I'm concerned with Georgia is with some of the quarterback coaches, the coaches' choices and quarterbacks, how will that affect, or have you heard anything, rumor-wise or other, that it could affect some of the recruiting for quarterbacks, and especially a certain one that's coming up, and their thoughts of maybe not going to Georgia because they may not be the guy that's, handling the ball?
Yeah, right. Right now, in relation to – I don't think Stetson Bennett affects anything because this is his last year, but – if I told you for a class project, you have to find me something negative to say about Kirby Smart, you could get into his management of quarterbacks if you wanted to. Now, I think he has some defense on almost every decision he's made, but the critics could find fault.
Well, and I trust his judgment. I just wonder how it might affect future recruiting for quarterbacks.
I don't know. I think the Stetson Bennett situation is going to be a real challenge if he is not spectacular, and if he struggles early on, especially in that opening game, then I think. But also, if you're Kirby Smart, you have to play it like this. You can't you run a bigger risk of just perceptively looking like an oaf if you don't support Stetson Bennett until you have reason not to support him. I know that's a word salad there, but he's got to stick by. He needs to stick by him at the moment.
Well, and I got to meet Stetson. He's a nice guy. He was actually down here at the Red Bar 2 weeks after the national championship, and he just happened to walk up, and I just tapped him on the shoulder, and I said, "Hey, thank you. Just thank you."
No, he is. There's no question. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Hugh and Deep Gap.
Hello. Hello, Paul. How are you today?
Hugh, we are doing well. Thank you.
This whole discussion about booster support in athletics, it's been around 70 years. I watched Kentucky footballs. Well, starting back in 1946 when they brought Bear Bryant to Kentucky from Maryland, one of his first moves was to contact a man named Frank Sadler, who was a student at Maryland and had been his manager and expediter. and he sent him a letter. Now, this is all documented in a publication, a book by Russell Rice called The Wildcats Kentucky Football. It was printed in 75. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, Frank came to Lexington and had to kind of make his own way, and it was on the secret, and Bryant made sure he got a place to stay once he got enrolled in the university in the fall, and he started a group called, it was Cat spelled backwards, went all over the state finding boosters to put money in a slush fund, and the guy that was chairman was the head man of Southeastern Greyhound Lines named Huglet, was the guy who held the bag and had one of his agents disperse money based on how well players played. That was in 1946-7-48, man. It's gone on forever, Paul. And the fella, the attorney that claimed that, you know, it was not effective, hell, he's not in touch with reality. Boosters have been supporters of athletics, big-time college athletics, most of my lifetime, and I'm 81 years old, and it's just we didn't talk about it. The truest thing I've heard is NIL just brought it out in the open and put a little bit of transparency on it. That doesn't mean it doesn't need to be regulated, and to that end, if the NFL can figure out a way to restrict everything from the number of employees in the back office and coaches, and can set definite limits on payroll and have all sorts of taxes if you go over that amount, then I would think big-time college football can ultimately wind up in a similar type of deal that is actually protected from antitrust activity. With that said, there's another issue, which I'm not a lawyer and I don't understand, but I lived on Takes Creek Road in the 60s, about three blocks from Lansdowne East Apartments, and it's interesting enough because Frank Sadler, the same guy who was Rupp's fixer, or Bryant's fix-it man, became one of the most successful businessmen in Central Kentucky. He owned a big lumber company and shopping center in Lansdowne East. And one of his primary promoters was Pat Riley, the basketball player, lived in a fine apartment right there on the pool, helped bring people in. He also drove a red Corvette, a brand new one with a dealer tag. He had a part-time job selling Corvettes. The quid pro quo was alive and well in the 60s.
Sounds good. Hey, just thank you. We're up against a break. I hate to run, but surprising Kentucky basketball back then.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And welcome back. Great to have all of you here. William in Maryville, Tennessee is up next.
Hello, Paul.
William the Conqueror. Go right ahead.
Well, Governor Paul. Governor Feinbaum, excuse me, sir. I don't want to be disrespectful. I've heard a couple of your guests talk about how walk-ons are affected under NIL. But, you know, there's another angle to this, Paul, and I don't know anybody's talked about it. And why couldn't a coach or a program use walk-ons to expand their 85 scholarship limits by taking a young man that maybe is a good student, in-state player, and saying, look, we're not going to give you a scholarship even though you deserve one. We're going to give you an NIL package and maybe an academic scholarship and some NIL money, and we're going to keep you as a walk-on, but it's going to open up another scholarship for somebody else so we can basically pad our roster and use NIL to get around scholarship limits.
Good point.
Have you heard anybody talk about doing that?
Not yet. You're the first.
Interesting point. Interesting point, Paul.
Without a doubt.
Take care, Governor. See you.
Thank you. I can't get away from this governor thing. If elected, I will not serve. Don is in Maryland. Hello, Don.
Hey, I was laughing. Hey, Governor, that's a good title. That's a good title.
I like that. Thank you.
Paul, the downside of the SEC, I think it affects people's thinking. I have two quick questions. How many years has Kirby Smart been head coach at Georgia?
Six.
How many national titles did Nick Saban win in his first 5 years?
Zero.
At Alabama?
Well, no. Well, you now hold on a second. You didn't say at Alabama. Kirby Smart's only been a head coach since he went to Georgia. Nick Saban started at Michigan State. Nick Saban won a national. Nick Saban won, I think, three in his first 5 years.
Right, right. I meant to compare Kirby Smart's first 5 years at Georgia.
That's okay.
With Nick Saban's first 5 years at Alabama.
We have a delete button on this show. We can always correct.
Hello?
We're here.
Hello?
Is it me?
It's me.
Looking for the governor?
The governor's still here, Don.
With Nick Saban's first 5 years.
But Don is not.
The Don has
left the building. Walker is up next. Hello, Walker.
Hello, how are you?
Quite well, thank you.
So I want to talk about the division standings. So who do you think will win the SEC East and the SEC West?
Georgia, Alabama.
Right now. I feel like that's what a lot of people are saying, which, I mean, I feel like Georgia in the East right now is pretty secure. I feel like they did lose a lot of players in the draft, but they got a lot of people back in the new recruiting class. But this year, I feel like – I honestly think A&M has got it in the West. They got, like – tell me if I'm wrong. I think 7 5-stars, 8 5-stars.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong, but you told me that. Can you tell me who their quarterback's going to be?
No, I can't. Which okay. The quarterback is
– I can tell you who the Alabama quarterback is going to be. One more thing I can tell you. I can tell you that the Alabama A&M game is October 8th in Tuscaloosa.
That's going to be a tough game.
Yeah.
I do feel like Bama's going to win that. But I feel like overall, I do feel like Texas A&M is going to have a better season. I feel like they're going to win more games outside of their outside of Bama, their Bama game. I feel like they're going to win all their other matchups.
My question is, will A&M be even undefeated by the time they get to Alabama? They got Miami, Arkansas, at
yes.
Mississippi State. Those are two games that the Aggies lost last year against Arkansas and Mississippi State.
I feel like Arkansas, I do not think they will lose to Mississippi State this year. I just don't think that's going to happen. Miami, probably not. I feel like if they're going to lose one game and it's a big, underdog is Arkansas. They're a very good team. I think they could shock a lot of people. Like, they're going to be a tough matchup for my Gamecocks week two, which that's a game I'm really scared about. So I feel like if they're going to lose one of those games, it's probably going to be to Arkansas.
Walker, you've got a future in sportscasting. Call us soon. We'll take a break. I like that kid. He had it down. We'll come back. Andy Staples, I don't know what his future looks like, but his past has been great. He will join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's always a treat for us to catch up with Andy Staples of The Athletic, always a must-read if you're a college football fan. And his latest opens up quite an odyssey. It's about a game that had the ultimate domino effect. Andy always he's got the studio going for him as well. Unlike some of our guests, he doesn't stand out in the middle of a field. He does it right. Good afternoon, Andy.
Well, I stopped putting up a backsplash for this, Paul. So I don't know how professional I am. I could be standing in the middle of the field. That might be more professional. I do have plaster.
Why would you want to be professional at this point in your career?
It's worked for me so far being very unprofessional. So I'm going to keep that up.
Is that I'm just trying to think of what you have behind you that might be interesting. I'm looking over your shoulder here.
Well, Paul, you got your Touch of Class license plate now. Your listening audience, most of whom live in the South, you know this. You had a grandparent or had a friend who had a grandparent who had this on the front of an Oldsmobile. For me, it was an aunt. But you had somebody in your orbit who had that on their front license plate.
I think it was my mom and them.
That's right, my mom and him.
Let me get to your story, because it's really interesting how a couple of things led to a couple of hundred things, and I guess it begins with Lincoln Riley and the headline in your piece is the Stanford USC game butterfly effect, how one firing sparked nearly 250 coaching changes, and of course the firing was Clay Helton. So I'll get out of the way, as they say in the trade, and let you pick up your masterpiece here.
Yeah, me and Max Olson did this, and Max is the master of the coaching butterfly effect spreadsheet. He was, in fact, still sending me more changes even after the story ran, because some more support staff positions got filled. But basically, Clay Helton gets fired at USC. Lincoln Riley gets hired to replace him. Clay Helton goes to Georgia Southern. This creates this massive whirlwind of changes. And the one we started with, let's see if I can remember this off the top of my head, because it's amazing how far this one goes. So Clay Helton gets fired at USC. Lincoln Riley gets hired to replace him. Brent Venables gets hired to replace Lincoln Riley. Brent Venables hires Jeff Lebby from Ole Miss to run the offense. Ole Miss hires Charlie Weiss Jr. from USF to run its offense. USF hires Travis Trickett, who is the receivers coach at West Virginia, to come be the offensive coordinator. West Virginia hires Coastal Carolina's receivers coach to replace Travis Trickett. Coastal Carolina moves its tight ends coach to receivers coach, moves an offensive analyst to tight ends coach, and then hires an offensive analyst who happened to be a guy named Jason Barnes, who was the receivers coach and had only been the receivers coach for 2 months at Bridgewater College, which is a Division III school in Northern Virginia. So there is a Division III school looking for a receivers coach right now because Clay Helton got fired in September.
Well, I lost you at Bridgewater College, but anyway.
USF.
Having given us that, let me ask you about the beginning of that wordplay, Lincoln Riley and the impact that he has already had, and what do you think it will translate to for the Trojans?
Well, I think so far you've gotten about what you expected. The Caleb Williams followed him from Oklahoma, so they've got the quarterback that Lincoln Riley wanted and that obviously played very well for Lincoln Riley the second half of last season, and they've gotten a bunch of transfers. The guys that got out of the transfer portal, the skill position ones tended to be pretty good players from their old school. Along the line of scrimmage, it's a little bit more of a mixed bag. Now, the defensive tackle from Arizona State, who's considering them, he's really good. Jordan Addison, the receiver, Biletnikoff winner, he's looking around. He's considering Alabama and Texas as well, but he's very much considering USC. Was sending out Instagram posts from Lincoln Riley's pool this weekend. So they could flip that roster and be different looking. But here's the thing. Under Clay Helton, they usually had good quarterback play. They usually had really good skill position play. It's their line of scrimmage play. It's their development on the offensive and defensive lines that has been lacking over the past, really since the Pete Carroll era ended. And right now, if you look at the Pac-12, who dominates the Pac-12? In the South, it's Utah. In the North, it's Oregon. Those are teams that have great players along the line of scrimmage. Utah and Oregon both have NFL players on their offensive line. They have NFL players on their defensive lines. And that's what you've got to overcome. So I'm not sure USC's quite ready to compete with that yet. I think they're going to have to do better on both lines of scrimmage before they are ready to compete for the Pac-12 title, much less the national championship.
Talking to Andy Staples. Andy, we won't spend too much time on it because I know we're all a little bit NIL'd out, but number of meetings the last couple of weeks. There was another one last week. There's one going on now. And, of course, the SEC meets in 2 weeks. A lot of sound and fury, but what is all this conversation across the board signifying?
Well, there's not really much they can do under the current system. Their intransigence, and I'm talking about the schools and the leadership of the conferences and the NCAA, their unwillingness to budge for decades caused this. They caused the state governments to pass the NIL laws. They caused the Supreme Court to rule 9-0 against the NCAA and basically got them backed into this position where their current form of governance can't actually govern anything. Like, they can't make new rules. They can't enforce them lest they risk being dragged into federal court. So what they've got to do is come up with a new system of governance and then figure out, okay, how do we make some rules that we can actually abide by, enforce, and that don't get us dragged into court? And so it's going to be a bumpy next few years as they get that figured out, because there's nothing in this current system that's going to allow them to get their arms around this. There's just not. And look, people like me have been saying for years, just let whoever wants to pay the players pay them. Who cares? What's going to happen? The same two or three teams are going to win the national title every year? Oh, wait, that was already happening. The old rules created probably the most lopsided competitive playing field in any major American sport. These actually seem to be having some players move to maybe difference. Maybe that's why Nick Saban wants that parity back. Maybe he misses that brand of parity that they were allowed to dominate more easily.
I'm glad you solved that conundrum, because we've been searching since the other day trying to explain what Saban said, and he's caught a lot of flack from Twitter gangsters who just have nothing better to do but attack the GOAT. But how expound on that, because you know it doesn't seem like there are many more entrants to the party, but how could a school move from wherever they are to at least the outer banks of the CFP consideration by what's happening now?
Well, you look at, like, Tennessee has its first commitment from a five-star quarterback since 2002. Maybe that has something to do with this. You know, maybe there are schools, and Tennessee's a good example, where they have very passionate fans, very passionate donors. I think Arkansas is another example of that, where they may be able to put something together that convinces a guy who would have been going to Georgia or to Alabama to go there. I mean, Texas A&M, number one recruiting class last year. And I've done the story about that situation. And obviously there was no $30 million budget. Otherwise they would have brought back Kenyon Green and DeMarvin Leal instead of letting them go to the NFL. Cause a first team all SEC guy is a bird in the hand, but they couldn't afford that. So you're seeing it spread out a little bit more, not a lot more. And you're also seeing it consolidate more in a different place. Now, instead of the same two or three, it's the same 25 or 30. And then schools like Pittsburgh get screwed, and schools like West Virginia get screwed. because they can't put together anything to keep their best players. So it's affecting schools in different ways. But the Nick Saban thing, I always find it funny when he's doing this, because I think he's just secretly laughing at all of us, because he says all this stuff publicly. But really, it's always more of a warning than a complaint. Remember when he said, "Is this what we want football to be with the up-tempo offenses?" That was him going, "Well, if you want me to do it with much better players than everybody else, I guess I will." And with the transfer rules, he's like, "Well, if you want me to take Vanderbilt's best offensive tackle because he wants to come play for Alabama, okay, guess I will." So that's probably what he's saying here now. So those who think this, any of this means the end of Alabama's dynasty, no. Until Nick Saban decides to retire, I don't think that's going to change.
And you mentioned Vanderbilt, not to pick on them, but a schools like that, do they have much hope in this current structure?
Did they have any hope before?
No.
Okay. I mean, look, I was there for those 2 9-win seasons under James Franklin. Yeah. Those were magical. But does anybody think they have a chance to win the SEC ever? Has anybody thought that?
Same answer.
Okay.
I was just trying to avoid being quoted on that.
Listen, it's your folks who do this. I would get on them, because I understand when I say something stupid on this show, and that happens pretty much every time, I know that it's getting pulled and tweeted out and blasted on Instagram, but you're their boss, Paul. When you say it, you can be like, "Hey, guys, I know I that wasn't quite what I meant." So,
well, no, the people here don't concern me, but it there are a lot of people out there, Andy. I'm embracing. I don't want to be that guy that, "Hey, I'm going to block you on Twitter. I'll never talk to you again." I mean, that's ridiculous. But I mean, there are just a lot of content providers out there that in May need Andy Staples to say something silly on the Fun Bum show right now, and it will be a meltdown. So go ahead, say something.
Well,
give us a crazy prediction for the upcoming season.
I don't have one. I did one of those last year when I said that Georgia was going to strike back on Florida, and I got so much anger from the Florida fans, and then it started popping back up again after the Georgia game. So I did appreciate you guys clipping that one, because I'm not right very often, as my wife reminds me. And so I felt good about that one coming back up. I don't have anything crazy in the SEC. There's nothing that seems it's weird, because everything's so much in flux right now, Paul. Nothing you could tell me that will happen in the next 6 months would surprise me, because the last year has been so wild.
I agree. And because I think we're really eager to get back to so-and-so is going to win. We had a guy on the other day said, "You know, South Carolina is going to beat Georgia," but that's easy. You can call your shot anywhere you want. But you know what you said about Florida, you know, wasn't, you know, it's just that Florida fans,
it was not revolutionary, but they were very mad, because
so what is Florida,
they thought in 2020,
you live down there. I mean, you live in Gainesville. What should we expect from the Gators this year?
So I think that really depends on how good Anthony Richardson is, because an elite quarterback can make up for a lot. But Florida's roster is not really where it needs to be. Receiver and linebacker are kind of the thinnest positions, and they got to find some guys there. But if Anthony Richardson is good, then I think it can make for a better season. I think the folks in Gainesville are resigned to a pretty average season. And the thing is, I said this on your show last time. This is the one that got tweeted out and blown up, which blew my mind, because it just told me that people haven't actually been watching college football in the last few years. When I said that Florida has the toughest opening two games in America with Utah and Kentucky, that's still true. That hasn't changed. So if they can split those, I think you should be pretty happy. But also, you look at what Billy Napier's doing behind the scenes. You look at the way he's organized the program. They are doing the things that need to be done to win in the SEC. Whether they will actually win in the SEC is another story. It's you know, you've got to be able to do it on the field. You've got to manage the games properly. But they are doing the things in recruiting and behind the scenes staffing, that sort of thing, that it takes to win. So they've now paid the price of admission, and now we'll see if they can get it done.
Andy, we're really late here, but it's my fault. One last question, because we're talking about Florida, but can you explain to us what's going on with Dan Mullen? He took some weird high school gig the other day in Georgia.
I could not. I thought he was coming to work with you guys. I thought he was going to be your co-host, Paul. I just assumed he was going to co-host the Paul Feinbaum show for a year and then hop back in. Because listen, Dan Mullen can still coach some ball. Like, the guy's been very successful. Like, I think you put Dan Mullen at the head of a Group of Five program or a program, you know, in a different Power Five conference, he can win you some games. So, you know, it's a good buyout life he's got going on right now, and maybe he just wants to decompress for a little while and get back to the basics. But I just figured a year co-hosting with Paul, and look, 20 hours of live radio a week is very difficult. So you'd have somebody to bounce
well,
stuff off of.
Well, the truth is, he said, I'll do the show, but the bald guy has to go.
Well, Paul, you could be living that buyout life then.
Glad you said it. Maybe somebody's watching.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. It was interesting what Andy said about how miraculous it would be if the Gators could split the opening two games against Utah and Kentucky. Florida opened in Vegas as a 2.5-point favorite over Utah. So I know that sounds strange considering Utah is expected to be so great, but remember, Utah is a Pac-12 team. Florida may be a middle of the packer in the SEC, but that trumps anything the Pac-12 has to send our way. Let's continue with more calls. Jim is up next.
Hey, enjoying the show today. It's quite active.
Thank you very much.
I just have one quest here. I'm in my 80s, and before I'm 90, I want to write a book about what I think is the two greatest teams that have enhanced college football in the past 100 years.
Okay.
And I don't know which one is the top one, but the two I'm going to write about are Alabama and Notre Dame. And I wondered what you thought about it.
Yeah.
And
I think, Jim, if you ended the conversation in 1988, Notre Dame would be the winner. But do you know what's happened since 1988? When Notre Dame last won a national championship, Alabama has won seven
yes.
national championships since Notre Dame last won one.
Yes, and I'm not talking about though who has scored the most points.
No, I'm just telling you right now. It's nolo contendere. It's not even close because, I mean, Notre Dame has a tremendous reputation, and it has Knute Rockne and all the great coaches that have been there. But Alabama today has the two best coaches
in modern
college football history, Saban and Bear Bryant.
Amen. I'm with you. That's why I choose them. And I think Notre Dame, I'm going back one. I'm talking about a century, 100
yeah,
no, years.
I'm aware of what a century is.
Yeah.
That's 200
and,
years, right?
Yeah. And I thank you for your comments. I am here, pray for me writing this book and doing the information. But
well, Jim, let me know when the book is published, and we will have you front and center on your first day of public. You said you're 89?
Well, no, I'm 84.
Oh, you're 84. You're a youngster.
Yeah, I'm a youngster. I'm working on the book. I have a, you know, before I'm 90, I hope I get the thing done.
Let me know if I can be of any help. I'm looking for a side gig.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.